Hey everybody, Bill Behrens here with another weekly report at Who's Slamming Who. As always, we'll go ahead and go through the ratings for TNA, but also take a look at recent ratings for both Raw, SmackDown, and also how the individual shows performed in the United Kingdom. And we'll do it all fairly briefly, hopefully. Let's see, TNA, a little bit of a disappointment. They continue what is a downward trend after peaking at a 1.31 several weeks ago, then following that with a 1.2, and then they follow that on the 17th of the month with a 1.13 and 1.544 million viewers, which is, to date, their lowest performance for the year. Second lowest was the week of January 17th through the 21st at a 1.15. So hopefully the downward trend does not continue. It looked like they had some steam going with the babyface turn for the Fortune Group and the initial setups. But I think, again, the problem that TNA will continue to have is that they have a tendency to throw main event matches into the ring without sufficient build-up week to week, so that one week anticipates the next week, so that what they do one week can create residual benefit to the next week. The follow-up continues to be a problem for TNA, who continue to believe that they have to do something surprising or hotshotty. I wouldn't be surprised, for example, if tonight, as I record this on the 24th Thursday, they're in Fayetteville doing a television taping that regrettably is not live, as that might be the greatest impact for them, were they to try to surprise somebody. And my guess is they will, in a knee-jerk way, feel that they have to provide some kind of surprise. And the likelihood of this is following Raw bringing back The Rock and Hunter Hearns Helmsley, which will lead to a psychological disadvantage feeling on the part of TNA management. Oh, we got to bring somebody back. So, of course, bless his heart, Sting will probably get re-signed again and continue to not necessarily be programmed in a way that's going to contribute. But maybe because there was so much teasing around Sting going to WWE, bringing Sting back, which, again, I think is likely at this point, maybe that will generate some small amount of interest, since that will at least answer the question of whether he's going to WWE. But we'll find that out after they tape the show tonight, because whatever the surprise is, we'll end up finding out because the internet will report the surprise, and then whatever the residual benefit of the surprise is, it'll only have minimal impact because, well, it won't be that much of a surprise by the time it gets done. Anyway, moving on back to the ratings, the 1.13 was represented in quarter-hour breakdowns. Show started at a 1.17 with an in-ring promo, dropped to a 1.09 when matches finally got to the ring. Odds are, in terms of the interpretation TNA would give that, the matches dropped the rating, where the reality is it's what happens in the segment before that affects what audience is delivered to the next segment. So the better answer is the talking and what followed it had the audience leave, and by the time they got to the second quarter hour, the audience was gone. Good news is that audience came back in the third quarter hour, oddly almost, because that was the highest rated quarter hour, and that rarely happens, at a 1.21. Interestingly, the match that was featured there was Kazarian versus Robbie E, so I'm not sure what that says, but at the same time, good for them. Quarter hour four was a 1.13, a drop-off. A slight increase in quarter hour five, but not a substantial one, to a 1.14, more growth in quarter hour six, 1.15. Fairly major drop in quarter hour seven to a 1.05, and then by quarter hour eight, they came back to a 1.10 for RVD versus Jeff Hardy with Mr. Anderson as the referee. So the short story is, once again, TNA started with a 1.17 rating on Spike, and in quarter hour eight, we're left with a 1.10. So once again, TNA had difficulty retaining audience, bounced all over the place within these smaller numbers throughout the show, and then had a lower overall audience when the show ended than when it started. Ideally, they want to flip that at some point and have an overall larger audience at the end of the show, building to a successful program. One of the rare times that happened historically was in the Empty Arena match where Sting faced Kurt Angle, where that match was teased and well-promoted all the way through. You can analogize that or compare it well to the other successful rating that TNA got when they premiered Hulk Hogan, even though they could have done it much simpler. They had Hogan driving in a circle in a limo, but they teased for an hour that at the beginning of the next hour, you'd see Hogan delivered him and delivered a substantial rating. Similarly, they did a countdown to an appearance, the return of the Undertaker recently on WWE, and that will help the overall rating and did help the overall rating. In fact, that episode did one of the highest ratings Raw has had in recent memory, and certainly this year, at a 3.9 rating and 5.86 million viewers. So first they had the residual impact of The Rock's appearance the previous week, and you'll remember there was a disappointment with that appearance because it only delivered a 3.14 overall rating, but the true story was the growth from hour one to hour two. And once The Rock got in, the dramatic growth of the ratings and the quarter-hour breakdowns for Raw. So Raw last week did exactly what a show should do and grew as it went along, and then got the residual impact of the surprise, The Rock, and then delivered on their 221 tease by teasing it, then delivering it with The Undertaker, then delivering Hunter Hearns Helmsley as a surprise thereafter. Very effective booking, and the proof of that pudding is in the overall rating. The 3.9 rating, 5.86 million viewers, instantly not only becomes the highest rating for the year, but jumps Raw's overall year-to-date average substantially. Raw year-to-date had done a 3.08, 3.07, 3.28, 3.29, 3.48, 3.3, 3.14, then the 3.9. So congratulations to WWE on that successful stunt over the last 2 weeks as they head toward WrestleMania in a couple of months. And it appears they're on a very good track at this point, and we'll have to see whether they're able to sustain that. Hopefully, looking back at TNA, they can start to figure out how to do this too. They've done it before. They've proven they can, with different booking teams involved, they can tease something, get the audience to want to see it, and then deliver it. They just don't do it that often. They have a tendency to hotshot the main events rather than building to the main events in the individual programs. SmackDown for 218 delivered a 2 rating, 3.2 million households, which was couched as their second highest rating since the move to Sci-Fi. So far this season, SmackDown's been fairly consistent at around a 2 rating regardless. Their high has been a 2.12, and the low has been a 1.79. So statistically, not much jumping around, particularly as compared, say, to Impact. A 1.95 to a 1.92 to a 2.12 to a 2 to a 1.97 to a 1.79 to this most recent 2 rating keeps them fairly consistent in their performance since their move to Sci-Fi at or around an average 2 rating. At this point, almost exactly that. Impact, just going backwards for the fun of it, has been bouncing all over. They started with a 1.16, grew to a 1.25, dropped to a 1.15, grew to a 1.28. It was looking good, grew to a 1.31, then dropped to a 1.2, and then dropped further to a 1.14. So the one thing that is true about Raw is that they've been seeing some progressive growth, particularly over the last few weeks, even on the show with The Rock because of the growth hour to hour and then dramatic growth this week. SmackDown's been fairly consistent at a 2 in its booking. Impact is relatively bounced all over the place at above a 1 rating at least, which based on last year's story for Impact, where getting to a 1 rating was a holy grail for a while, at least they've crossed that hurdle and they're delivering in excess of a 1.1 now. So far, year-to-date, every week. So that's a good story for them. In the United Kingdom, I mentioned I'd bring that up. Impact had its first rating on Challenge on February 8th and actually did very well. They did 134,000 viewers. Raw, in that same week, on the 7th, did 149,000 viewers. SmackDown, on the 11th, same week, did 133,000 viewers. So a very competitive week for the three wrestling programs in the United Kingdom. And a very good start for Impact. I believe its last number in the United Kingdom was only around 35,000 viewers, somewhere between 30 and 40,000 viewers. So the 134,000 is a major improvement and a good story for them. Interestingly, though, they're okay numbers, but I was talking to Dave Marquez, this is a tangent, about his championship wrestling from Hollywood program that's on the KCOP out in Los Angeles. And right now they're averaging approximately 75,000 viewers in that one city. So as you look at the country of the United Kingdom, viewership at 133,000. And by the way, the viewership for Next and for Superstars over there is around 20-some thousand viewers each. Interestingly, that one little Hollywood NWA show is doing a fairly substantial viewership and higher viewership than Impact was getting in some cases over in the United Kingdom. So I just thought that was interesting that little NWA show out in California is able to accomplish that kind of viewership. 75,000 is not the biggest number ever in the Los Angeles marketplace that represents nearly 6% of the country, but it's still a substantial audience for a wrestling program and obviously commendable. So I guess that's it for ratings for this week. I'll move on. I've been seeing an interesting amount of, I don't know how to couch it, various wrestlers posting either videos or Facebook messages or tweeting about their disappointment that they got to the final and they were in that final group, but they didn't make the cut for Tough Enough, and disappointment that the producers strung them on in some way that made them feel as though they were going to make it and then they didn't, and what a shame that is. And some are even suggesting they have to now relook their whole thought process on wrestling and, you know, find another way to make much more money because of wrestling's limited opportunities. So all of that I found sort of entertaining because in my interaction with the Tough Enough producers, I interacted pretty much specifically back and forth in email with the casting producer, Chris Hazel, and I helped submit 4 or 5 different applications, videos, and other things for various wrestlers, all of whom were contacted by the producers, several of whom were told there were checks by their name and that they were being highly considered and there was a real chance they were going to be picked. I have very positive statements coming back from the producers about what they saw from the various people I submitted, and the long and short of it is none of them made the cut. For good or bad. And who knows who actually did make the cut, because so far, and surprisingly, very little information has come out of the casting other than who the trainers are and a couple of teases. I guess a Miss USA is involved. And then there was some mention by Val Venus that Mad Dog, that Matt Cross somehow had made it, which interestingly flies totally in contrast to a recent report that was published that Meltzer, I guess, put out that said that the producers were changed, that the girl that was doing it was then replaced by some guy, and that person was working closer with Kevin Dunn, and that they didn't really want wrestlers, they wanted models, and they wanted big guys. Well, if Matt Cross made the cut, he's not a big guy. So I'm confused at this point. We'll have to wait till we see what the cast actually is on Tough Enough to decide whether we're pleased, disappointed, or confused any further. But the one thing I would send out as a message to any of the wrestlers that applied, realized that lots of folk applied, half the free world, I'm sure. Everybody's promo expressed how they would be the next great thing. And the fact is that the people that made the cut did and the other people didn't, and whether it was based on size, which has been suggested, or lack of size, if Matt Cross has been suggested, I question that any of you that are complaining about how close you perceive you were to making the cut, or that final cut, supposedly, I doubt you were as close as you think you were. And I doubt that you were alone in the perception you were close. And unless we actually get a breakdown of how they did the consideration and what the final cut was, I think everybody's guessing based on some of the nice things the producers said, and they said those to pretty much everybody at some level. So just information for whatever it's worth, as more and more videos I'm sure will get published by people complaining that they didn't make a show that perhaps they were never destined to make to begin with. Moving on, the other thing that's entertained me is there's ongoing stuff coming up about this urban wrestling deal that Steve Carroll is doing. And I liked the last video they put up tremendously simply because it's the kind of video that we used to do back when I was doing TV syndication for major companies. You'd put together a video. I mean, we did one for Total Recall, the series, for example, that showed absolutely nothing. You know, just space and blah, blah, and then the credits, Total Recall, and it was a minute. And we were supposed to go sell the series based on that, and it had nothing to do with the series because we had no idea what the series was going to be, if it even started. Quo's Stairway to Heaven was just showed clips from the movie with the late Brandon Lee, who wasn't going to obviously be in the TV show, having previously died. And we had Mark DeCostas, who had been hired for the show, and so we showed pictures of him, you know, doing some stuff, looking good, and looking like he's going to fit in the role around scenes from a movie, and really didn't show anybody anything that had to do with the actual show itself. It was called The Crow's Stairway to Heaven. And eventually it did become a series, and it had some marginal success in syndication, and it proved that you don't have to actually show actual production from what you're doing to launch a project in television. But those tapes, those videos, were only showed to station people, not to the world at large. So when I saw the demo go out and be posted on the internet by Urban Wrestling, and it featured a whole bunch of stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with them, I just thought it was very entertaining that they were trying to sell a series to fans the way we used to try to sell series to TV stations, based on sizzle more than substance. Except the sizzle doesn't even make sense. So I'm watching, you know, this demo that's up. Steve Carroll starts out, and amazingly to me, and some of you won't understand the context, but and I was talking to a former ECW superstar yesterday, and we both agreed that Steve Carroll has gone from looking a little bit like a mini-me to Paul E. to looking like a clone of Todd Gordon. I don't know how that happened over the years, but it appears to have happened, but that's entertaining in and of itself. Then, and I have to concede my 54-year-old whiteness, I'm introduced in this video to two rap guys sitting in their studio, Uncle Murder and Briscoe, or Briscoe, one of the two. And they're fine, and they're keeping it real, and they're going to be involved. And Steve Carroll's explaining that the rap guys will, you know, be the leaders, you know, because, of course, the older white guy should explain all of this stuff. That makes the most sense to me. In fact, you know, the music guy's white, you know, that would be Bob Chapardi, I guess. And then, of course, the chief executive, Steve Carroll, is white. And then they got a couple of rappers, the Uncle Murder and then the Briscoe or Briscoe guy. And I don't, you know, I really don't know who any of these people are, and it's just looking like it's going to be really bad because they're telling me that these rap guys are going to be the guys that lead the wrestlers to the ring to the fight, and it's being promised this is basically going to be more extreme or more stupid than the stupidest ECW ever got when it was doing what it did. But how do we illustrate that? We illustrate it in the video by showing a bunch of ECW footage. And it includes scenes of Public Enemy doing spots. Well, they're not going to be available for the series, guys, no matter what, because they're not with us anymore. Then there's Ronnie Killings all over the video. And to the best of my memory, Ronnie Killings is under contract to World Wrestling Entertainment. And then they show RVD in the video. And to the best of my knowledge, he's under contract by another company. They do show a few people that are available, which is, you know, good, because hopefully they're actually showing to a fan base, people watching this on the internet, people they might actually deliver. You know, that'd be crazy talk. So they do show Jazz and Rodney Mack, and those guys are available, so maybe they'll become part of this thing. You see Balls, Mahoney, and Axel Rotten at one point, so maybe they'll be involved. But you really don't know. All you're seeing is a bunch of ECW stuff, a couple of rap stars, and then the music producer guy, the Bob Chapardi guy, comes up and starts talking about the success he had putting out the two ECW albums and his credentials based on that, and the fact that one of those albums was nominated for a Grammy. Well, you know, that's pretty cool. The album was nominated for a Grammy, so clearly this guy, as a music producer, has an awful lot of credibility if his album was nominated for a Grammy. Except, of course, that the Grammy was for its cover art. Didn't have a whole lot to do with the music, honestly. But still, it was nominated for a Grammy, and he was involved with the album, and I'm sure he had some approval over the cover art. So what we can extrapolate from this is that this new urban wrestling will potentially be more extreme than ECW. It'll involve rap stars like Uncle Murder and the Bisco Briscoe guy. It will involve potential music releases where potentially the album art may receive a Grammy. And it will feature potentially ECW stars that are no longer alive or are signed to other people, or maybe some of the people that are available, or none of those people at all. So what you end up getting out of the video, if you watch it from beginning to end, is, well, sort of nothing. That video, to a TV station, might actually play because they wouldn't know better. That video being presented on the internet to a fan base that you hope is going to watch this, and if it is going to be a pay-per-view only venture, already they're narrowing their audience. They're trying to make it urban, rappy, and violent. So all of a sudden, you're going from a mainstream audience you hope to embrace. You know, might have been a good idea to have a white rapper in there to try to widen your audience base rather than reduce it to simply a gangsta audience. And if they perceive that there's a big enough gangsta audience that's ready to keep it real by spending pay-per-view money, I think they're sorely mistaken. But I could be wrong on that because I am, of course, a 54-year-old white guy. Moving on, this weekend we're going to head over to NWA Anarchy for a great television taping there up in Cornelia, Georgia, 8 p.m. Bell Time, 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. You're going to want to make your way up there. It's going to be a great card. We have a first-time-ever Mega Rumble ladder match to determine the new Young Lions title. In this case, the eliminations are we have people coming out every minute, 11 contestants. Eliminations will be over-the-top rope pinfall or submission, but at any time somebody could climb the ladder and win the prize. If it gets down to two people, then the only way to finish the match is to climb the ladder and win the prize. No further eliminations at that point. One of the main events, one half of the show, will be Concrete Gorillas, Jay Fury and Nemesis with Jeff G. Bailey taking on the reunited Iceberg and Tank. And in the other half of the show, the Monster 7 with Jeff G. Bailey taking on Shadow Jackson. And there's going to be a stipulation in that where Jerry Palmer will be handcuffed to Jeff G. Bailey during that match. In addition, you'll see Mike Posey and Corey Hollis, Adrian Hawkins, Slim J, the team of Rich and Famous, the Hate Junkies, Andrew Alexander and Billy Buck, Youth Gone Wild, Sean Tempers, Brody Ray Chase, and a whole lot of other stuff. Several surprises on this particular show as we continue moving forward toward April 9th and the last show Jerry Palmer will promote in the building. It'll be Hardcore Hell 2011, which should be a tremendous event, and we hope fans will make their way to see it. If you're not able to come to the shows and you want to see the television product, it's easily available on the internet at nwaanarchy.net, also available at that website for low-cost downloads, so you can use it on your transportable media devices. $5 for big events and only $2 for the television programs allows you to download in high quality. So I encourage fans to check that out. Also true for the older NWA Wildside programming, and you can find that at nwawildside.com. This last weekend, we were in Warner Robins, Georgia, at Johnny G's for another great Rampage taping. Highlights were a 30-man Mega Rumble to determine the number one contender for the heavyweight title held by J-Rod. That was won by Bull Buchanan, but the story was Kyle Matthews, the second man in, surviving and at nearly 45 minutes in this match all the way to the end, and his eventual elimination in the match, not at the hand of Bull Buchanan, rather at the hand of Jimmy Rave, who had been eliminated prior to that. That led later in the second half to a tag team match, Mike Posey and Jimmy Rave taking on J-Rod and Kyle Matthews, that came out of what was initially a Mike Posey versus J-Rod match for J-Rod's heavyweight title. And that match leads to the next taping on March 5th, where they'll have Jimmy Rave, Mike Posey, Hot Like Lava, Sean Banks, and Crew Jones taking on the four-man team of Bull Buchanan, the number one contender for the heavyweight title, J-Rod, the heavyweight champion, Kyle Matthews, and his former tag team partner in Rampage, Frankie Valentine. So, tremendous event going on there. Also, it was announced at the show, and will be announced further on the internet in various ways, that Rampage has joined the National Wrestling Alliance as an associate in Middle Georgia. They are planning to bring in various of the NWA champions over the next few months, and I'm looking forward to that interaction between Rampage Pro Wrestling and the National Wrestling Alliance as they do that. Already, Dark City Fight Club, Corey Chavis and John Davis have come in and defended the NWA World Tag Team title several times in Rampage Pro Wrestling, and we'll see more of that, those kind of defenses, including the hope of getting the World Heavyweight Champion very soon into Rampage Pro Wrestling. That's about it for this week. I'll look forward to seeing everyone, or not seeing, but talking with everyone next week. And have a great week. Let's hope that the big surprise tonight, or surprises tonight at TNA, are truly surprises. If my perception is Sting shows up, maybe that's a surprise. I have no idea. Bye-bye.